You think you know a place. You really do. You walk the same streets every day. You see the same faces. You know who takes their coffee with two sugars and who only buys sourdough on a Tuesday. You build up this cozy little picture in your head. A snow globe of a town. And then one day, someone comes along and just shakes it. Hard, and all the pretty little plastic snowflakes turn into a blizzard of chaos. For me, that town is Blossom, and the day the snow globe got shaken was the day Alistair Blackwood died. Now, Alistair Blackwood wasn't exactly Mr. Popularity. He was the town's resident recluse, a millionaire art collector who lived in a sprawling Gothic mansion on the hill that everyone just called the Perch. He was old money, the kind of quiet, intimidating rich that makes you feel poor just by existing in the same postcode. He rarely came into town, and when he did, he looked at everyone like they were a slightly disappointing piece of modern art he'd been forced to acquire. So when he turned up dead, the initial reaction around town was less grief and more very intense, very caffeinated curiosity. I should know. I run the Daily Grind, the only decent coffee shop for 30 miles. My shop is basically the town's central nervous system. All the gossip, all the rumors, they all get filtered through my espresso machine. The news broke on a Wednesday morning. Detective Miller, a man who runs on my darkest roast and deep-seated sense of pessimism, came in looking even more gray than usual. He ordered a black coffee, no room for cream, and just stared at it. He said Alistair Blackwood was found dead in his study. And here's the kicker, the part that turned it from a simple, if you'll excuse the term, old rich guy kicks the bucket story into something else entirely. The study door was locked from the inside. The windows were barred, as you'd expect from a man with millions of dollars of paintings on his walls. The only key was in the dead man's pocket. A classic locked room mystery right here in Port Blossom. It was impossible. The official cause of death, at least initially, was poison, a rare fast-acting toxin found in the dregs of his favorite Earl Grey tea. The cup was right there on the desk beside him, so the question wasn't just who did it, but how in the world did they get poison into a man who was sealed inside his own room. Did he do it himself? Miller said no. Not a chance. There were signs of, well, he didn't elaborate, but it was murder. And suddenly, my little coffee shop was Grand Central Station for amateur sleuths. Everyone had a theory, everyone had a suspect, and let me tell you, Alistair Blackwood had collected potential enemies like he collected priceless art. First, you had this obvious one, the nephew, Julian Blackwood. The guy was slick, too slick, you know. He wore suits that cost more than my car and had a smile that never quite reached his eyes. He was Alistair's sole heir, and he wasn't exactly shy about his frustration with his uncle's continued existence. He'd been in town for a week, supposedly trying to reconnect, but everyone knew he was just waiting for the old man to drop so he could cash in. He had the motive, a big one, but the alibi, rock solid. He was at the town's only pub, charming half the village at the time of death, or so he claimed. And there was Penelope Croft, a rival art dealer from the city. She and Alistair had a notoriously nasty history. They'd been battling over a particular painting for years, and rumor had it Alistair had ruined her reputation to acquire it. She was sharp, cold, and had a gaze that could curdle milk. She was in town, staying at the inn, supposedly for an artisan fair. Right, an artisan fair. She claimed she never went near the perch, but Penelope was the kind of woman who could probably convince a guard dog to mail her the key. And this is where it gets a little sad. A little more Pork Blossom. The third suspect was Eleanor Vance, our town librarian, sweet, quiet Eleanor, who wouldn't harm a fly, or so we thought. I saw her one afternoon crying into a book in the history section. Turns out she and Alistair had been having a secret thing, a romance. Nobody knew. He'd visit the library after hours. They shared a love for old books, but maybe it wasn't all poetry and pressed flowers. Maybe he'd broken her heart. A crime of passion? It seemed impossible. She was Eleanor. She organized a bake sale, but you know what they say. It's always the quiet ones. The days turned into a week. Detective Miller was getting nowhere. The locked room was a brick wall. The poison was untraceable to any local source. The whole town was on edge. The snow globe was still shaking. And me? I was just serving coffee. But I listened. That's my job, really. I listened to the whispers, the half sentences, the things people say when they think no one's paying attention. On Saturday, I had a big catering order, pastries and coffee, for a staff meeting up at the perch. The police were done with the scene, and Julian was already acting like he owned the place. I had to deliver it myself. The place was immense, cold. Every footstep echoed. It felt like the house itself was holding its breath. I was in the kitchen setting things up when the housekeeper came in. Mrs. Gable. She'd worked for Alistair for over 40 years. A tiny bird-like woman who seemed to just blend into the wallpaper. She looked exhausted, her face a roadmap of grief and stress. She was being very quiet, just wiping down a counter that was already spotless. We made small talk. I offered my condolences. She just nodded, her hands nervously fidgeting with her apron. And that's when I saw it was nothing. It was everything. And behind her ear, nestled in the fine gray hair at the temple, was a smudge, a tiny gray dark smudge. It looked like soot. I didn't think much of it at first. Old house, lots of fireplaces, but something about it snagged my brain. I remembered something Detective Miller had said in the shop a few days earlier, just muttering into the coffee. He'd said the man died drinking tea, but the whole room smelled faintly of wood smoke. The fireplace in the study had been used that night, nothing unusual. Alistair lit a fire every single evening, a ritual. Soot, wood smoke, a locked room. I went home that night and couldn't sleep. I just kept replaying that image. Mrs. Gable, the smudge of soot, her nervous energy, and then it clicked. It was like one of those magic eye pictures. You stare and stare at the static, and then finally, the whole picture just emerges. The poison was a trick, a brilliant theatrical piece of misdirection. Alistair Blackwood wasn't killed by the poison in his tea, or at least it wasn't what killed him first. He went into his study at 10 o'clock every night. He locked the door. He lit the fire. He drank his tea every single night. A man of unbreakable routine. A man whose habits would be weaponized against him. What if someone knew that routine? Someone who had access to the house, to the study, before he went in for the night. Someone who could, say, climb into the roof without even anyone noticing. Someone who could block the chimney flue. It was so simple. It was horrifying. Sometime during the day, the killer blocked the flue from the outside. That evening, Alistair goes into his study, locks the door, feeling perfectly safe. He lights his fire, but the smoke has nowhere to go. It poured back into the room, silent, invisible, carbon monoxide. He gets drowsy, thinks he's just tired. He drinks his tea, which, yes, contains a little bit of poison. Not enough to kill him outright, but just enough to show up in his coroner's report and send the entire police force on a wild goose chase. He passes out from the fumes, and eventually he succumbs. The fire slowly dies out, but the damage is done. By morning, most of the gas has dissipated. All that's left is a dead man in a locked room, a cup of poison tea, and the faint smell of wood smoke. It's the perfect crime. And the only person who could have done it, the only person who, with the knowledge, the access, and that little smudge of soot behind her ear, was the quiet and invisible housekeeper who has served him for 40 years. I called Detective Miller. I didn't tell him my whole theory. I'm a baker, not a detective. I told him to check the chimney in the study and to ask Mrs. Gable when the last time she'd had the chimney swept. He called me back the next day. He sounded different, tired but not defeated. They found a bundle of rags stuffed tightly into the study's flue, and when they questioned Mrs. Gable, she confessed, just like that, no fight. It turns out Alistair wasn't just a recluse, he was a cruel man. He'd been blackmailing her for decades over a mistake her son had made as a teenager. He bled her dry, controlled her life. Her service wasn't loyalty, it was a prison sentence. So she planned his death with the same meticulous, patient details she used to polish his silver. She knew his routines better than he did. She created a puzzle she knew no one would solve, so she almost got away with it. So the snow globe of the Port Blossoms settled. Julian inherited the fortune. Penelope went back to the city, and Eleanor just kept checking out books. But it's different now. The snow is all black at the bottom, but we all know it's there. We all know what it looks like when it's shaken, and I know that sometimes the biggest mysteries aren't solved by looking for a smoking gun, but by noticing a little smudge of soot where it shouldn't be. Thank you. And this is just a fun story, all for fun, mysterious story that I wanted to share. Thank you.